Now, we know that finding the perfect non-alcoholic drink can sometimes feel like a major challenge, but we've discovered something that's about to knock your socks off and your taste buds too. GO Brewing. Did you know GO Brewing was rated number one, Michaela, for non-alcoholic beer in the country? And rightly so. Fun fact, all of their beers fall under the gluten-free guidelines, so you won't get that gross, bloated feel that you sometimes can get when you're drinking, let's be honest. Plus, all their brews without fruit have less than 1 gram of sugar. Because we want to feel sexy and sober and have fun, GO Brew is the perfect choice for us.
And who says beer isn't sophisticated when you could just put it in a champagne glass like I do? My favorite at the moment is the Sunshine State Tropical IPA from GO Brewing. It's the mango and peach flavor. As a listener, you can save 15% by going to brewing.com/sobergirls or by using the code sobergirls. Plus, get a free 2-day shipping on orders of $40 or more. Again, go to brewing.com/sobergirls or use our code sobergirls for 15% off.
Okay, can I be honest here?
Yes.
I used to rely on alcohol for a lot of things, including managing my PMS symptoms like anxiety, irritability, feeling blue. Ugh, huge mistake. However, as a sober girl today, that is obviously not an option, but have no fear. Ladies, we found a solution to our PMS woes. Alcohol, so not needed. Enter Jubilance, your daily support and new BFF when it comes to true and effective PMS relief. It's so simple. Just take one capsule a day and keep your symptoms at bay. If you're interested in trying it, you can use the code SOBERGIRLS for $10 off your first order.
I've noticed I have more energy, focus, less cravings, and my mood feels so much more balanced. Jubilance is a non-hormonal, available over-the-counter, and powered by two-ingredient formula used by thousands of women worldwide to live PMS mood symptom-free. Think less anxiety, less irritability, more peace, power, and dare I say, fun all month long. Try Jubilance for $10 off by visiting jubilance.com/sobergirls or use the promo code SOBERGIRLS at checkout. That's JUBILANCE.com/SOBERGIRLS for $10 off.
Welcome to a new episode of Two Sober Girls. I am here with my amazing co-host, Michaela, and we're sitting down with two new friends, Lisa and Hazel, and they're going to share their story of recovery, of where how they found the bravery to enter into rehab and how they are sober and strong and happy today with being deeply rooted and entrenched in sober community. There's so much we want to unpack. There's so much we want to talk about. So we should just probably dig in. So, ladies, welcome.
Thank
And thank
you.
you for being here. And I know we didn't talk about this prior to, but Lisa or Hazel, whomever wants to go first, and just kind of give us a little background of what your drinking was like, how you landed in rehab, which I'm a fellow rehabber. I'm right there with you. So this is such a important topic to discuss. And what your life looks like now on the other side, sober and recovering, because it's a daily dance we do. So I don't know, Lisa or Hazel, if you want to jump in first.
Hazel, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Go ahead, Lisa.
Okay. I think my drinking started, in my teenage years, growing up around it in my family, but it seemed like normal drinking until looking back. Now I kind of realized that there were more issues than I realized. I don't think I had a real issue with my drinking until probably my 30s, when I started to see little pockets of it creep up and go, okay, I did this, or I had a bad fall, or some kind of, outburst that I regretted, a drinking outburst. But, my dad died in a single car accident when I was 20 due to alcohol. And ironically, I drank to cope with that. But I didn't realize at the time that was kind of one of the warning signs, using alcohol to cope with grief and sadness, was a warning sign about alcoholism. So I continued drinking my 30s and 40s, and the pandemic hit, and I became a daily drinker. And I'm talking sometimes 6 to 8 drinks in a day, and most days. And I remember taking a break for even 48 hours seemed like a really long time to me. So I was dating somebody at the time, and he was also a daily drinker. So I was just going along with it. And I was experiencing a lot of depression, going to the doctor thinking I was hormonal. I went on antidepressants, failed to tell the doctor that I was drinking daily, and I didn't realize how much emotional upset that was causing in my life. I got a little clued in at one point that maybe this was an issue, and I decided to start taking significant breaks. And I would go back to drinking every once in a while, binge drinking. And I had an episode where I fell down the stairs in my condo complex and had to be hospitalized. And thank goodness, nothing severe came out of that except for a bruised ego. I was handed a binge drinking pamphlet in the hospital, which pissed me off, but it did open my eyes. And I decided to start my sobriety journey close to 3 years ago, but it was just taking breaks from drinking, white knuckling, getting myself educated. I started listening to you guys, but it wasn't until December of 2023 that I had what I call my last episode, my last drunk, that I decided to go to treatment. And life has completely changed for me. I never thought I'm 136 days sober, and I never thought that I would be here living my authentic life. But that's a little of my background. I just mentioned, Aaron, something about the real drunks. I didn't think I was a real drunk because I was successful and accomplished and all these things. And I never thought I would land myself in a treatment center. But lo and behold, I did, and it's been the best experience of my life. So
Saved your life.
it saved my
Saved
life.
your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
Amazing. So inspiring. I can't wait to unpack that journey in
Yeah.
December, you deciding to go in. But first, let's welcome Hazel and tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, so very similarly, it was kind of something I was brought up to do. It was socially acceptable. It was almost odd. Well, it wasn't almost odd. It was very odd if you didn't drink, and from a very early age. So I went through all of, my formative years, having that in my, it was a way I could cope. It was a way I could be social and not have such high anxiety. And if you weren't holding a drink, there was something wrong with you. So I went through all of my, teenage years and everything, drinking, and it was acceptable. It was encouraged. And I never got to know myself. I checked all the societal boxes. I, did everything right. I was a debutante, went to college, joined a sorority. I did all of the things, but I never got to know myself. And I didn't realize until right before Sabino that I was just self-medicating all of those years. It wasn't about the drinking, it wasn't about the partying or the fun side of it. It was just really trying to get through day-to-day stuff. So that's what led me to Sabino. And since then, I have found such a my life is so much better now. It's so much more organized. And it's just when I got there, I was like, I'm not falling for this hippy dippy bullshit, but it's true. Like it honestly, it is, it has saved my life. People suggested that I go to treatment before, and it was awful, and I couldn't imagine anything worse. And when I was finally to my lowest point and I went there, it is the best thing that's ever happened to me. The first few days were horrible, like just tough trying to acclimate to that society. And then it became the best thing that has ever happened to me. Now everything is clicking in place in my life. Everything.
And is this the first time for both of you ladies where you actually got in to do the work on yourself to get to know yourself?
Absolutely for me.
So I will tell you that I was, a binge drinker. I did not know how to cope with anxiety and sadness without alcohol. I truly did not have that tool. I would go to therapy knowing I had some work to do on myself, and I would come home and open a bottle of wine. So you're not actually processing what you're working on or processing grief or trauma when you're doing that, right? You're just adding layers to that trauma that's already embedded in you. And so going to Sabino, where you had to be sober and you actually had to feel pain, I've never felt pain like that in my life in treatment. I'm going through emotional pain where I some days had to lay in my bed and cry in the darkness because I was processing for the first time in my life at 45 years old. So having an immersive experience like that, absolutely, I've never done anything like that, and it is life-changing.
Yeah, I don't think anyone willingly is like, all right, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to go do this, right? So I think that's why going to treatment and having that space away from your regular environment is crucial, right? You're away from your family, you're away from your basic routines, and you're kind of put into this thing that you have, these things that you have to do that you've probably never done before, and they're new and they're scary. And, but, you know, you're a testament that it works.
Yeah, I have two kids, and that was my biggest holdup. I didn't want to go. I didn't want, because I have two children. I didn't want to miss out on time with them. They were so supportive, and that told me I need to go. They were so excited for me to go and just get the help that I needed.
Yeah. How long
Hey,
did
so
it take you to, like, when you decided to go to actually go? Because I know that's a process for people.
for me, it was pretty immediate. I was there within 5 days of deciding to go.
So my story is a little bit different. I was taking significant breaks from drinking all of 2023, and then I had two people kind of on the periphery die on Thanksgiving week. And but close friends were impacted, and it was just a really hard time. And knowing that I can't, you know, deal with grief without drinking, I came home after the funeral and I drank. And I said some stuff to a family member that was not the authentic version of me, painful things. You know, my own trauma came up when I was drinking. And I knew that I needed some real help. And so I reached out to Aaron actually, and I said, hey, you did this podcast months ago on not all treatment centers are created equal. Would you help me find a treatment center? I knew nothing, right? Like I'd never done this. This was a huge leap for me. So Aaron and I had a call the next day, and we started tossing around ideas. I'm like, I think I want to go somewhere where nature is involved in Arizona. It's January. You know, I need to go somewhere like Arizona, Southern California, where I can be out in nature. And Aaron and I talked about like trauma-based treatment centers are so important because I really believe that alcohol addiction is not the first problem, right? There is, you know, it's in our genetics. It's also trauma-based. And so learning what those underlying issues are and dealing with those was really my priority. Why do I keep picking up the drink? So Aaron and I went back and forth, and I ended up at Sabino Recovery 3.5 weeks later. I had tons of time to plan, and went to AA meetings during that time to keep myself sober so I wouldn't have to go to detox. That was really important to me, to dive into the work and not have to detox. And yeah, I admitted myself on December 27th. Complete out of body experience. You walk it in, you're like, what the hell am I doing? Like, I don't belong here, you know? And like Hazel was saying, you give yourself a few days and there's no other place I should be.
Exactly. I miss it all the time, even though I'm sober. I still miss it. If I could be in that bubble again, that would be amazing.
I'm level two. I know I've so many things you both are saying out that's bringing me back to my experience. First, Hazel, something you said about children, that was my biggest reason why I went. I have two children. They actually didn't know that I went. And now I said I went on like a health and wellness adventure because they were younger. But I had to go because I had to be separated. And Lisa, like, and I'm laughing. I walked in and I'm like, isn't this a place for like real addicts? Like, I'm addicted to rosé. Is this really where I belong? I'm not sure. You know, and then, you know, if I was really being honest, I was drinking copious amounts of alcohol from like lunchtime, maybe 11, throughout the whole day. So no, I am an addict, recovering addict, and I needed to be separated. And I did it primarily first for my children, but we all know you have to do it first. You have to get to a place where it's for you, for it to really stick. And Lisa, something you just said about trauma. Alcohol was never my problem. Alcohol is a substance. It's not my problem. I used it to medicate, to numb, to cope, to suppress trauma. We all have trauma. And that's another thing we don't want to talk about. Treatment centers, recovery, being alcoholic, addiction, and trauma. And guess what? That's why everyone's stuck in this loop. Every human being has trauma. You're living in a world that is full of trauma and brokenness and despair and beauty and light and limitlessness and the love of God. Both the duality's there. I had so much trauma buried that when I stopped drinking, I slept so much because I was in darkness. I was in so much pain that my body had to shut down because I couldn't process it all. And I couldn't believe the physical anguish I felt from emotional trauma. It is something, listen, anyone, I would never sign up for it. I would not, it's not, but it's the greatest thing. Like, now I can laugh with Michaela and be like, what a gift. Like I was freed. And now I know in life, I have to go back into that depth, into that darkness to go deeper and to heal more deeply and to connect more to God and my truth and my authentic self. You just keep releasing. So it's almost a reminder of don't be afraid of the darkness. Go all in. No, it's going to be brutal. You're going to survive, and it's everything you want on the other side. But had I not gone, for me as an addicted human, I would have never faced the darkness because in my world, they'd be like, "Hey, Erin, we're going to lunch. Have a drink." "Oh, you're fine. Have a drink." And I would have been, everything would have triggered me. I would be drinking the same day that I said, "Okay, I'm going to maybe go to a meeting." I needed the separation first. So, that for me and anybody else listening that can relate to that, I wasn't going to just do AA because this alcoholic would find ways to like have be dog be drinking and probably go to a meeting. Like, it's just I needed to be separated. So much more that I want to jump into. All treatment centers are not created equally. You really need to do your due diligence and connect with another human being who has gone. Find the treatment center that's best for you. Definitely trauma-based. I think you can go somewhere where there's sunshine, even better. Holistic wellness, full recovery. Of course, I'm going to say the spirituality piece has to be the foundation, in my opinion, and what I seem to work for me in my recovery. But it's not you. You go to this center, you do all this work, but if you don't continue it, you will be drinking. And this happens so often. I'm sure you both have heard these stories, or maybe know people who you were in treatment with. You drink the next day, you leave. So how are you guys, one day at a time, maintaining your sobriety on the other side of treatment? Like, what was the first thing you did when you left this treatment center that you could recommend for anybody?
I ate a bag of Doritos was the first thing I did, and then had some frozen yogurt. But one of the biggest things for me, and you're talking about holistic treatment centers, we had 15 modalities that we could choose from during our stay there, and I always chose like massage, acupuncture, things like that. Hazel took a little bit different route, and I want you to talk about ART and EMDR a little bit too. But for me, like the mind-body connection, I felt like I was doing so much trauma work that I needed to just recenter my body and like have this, healing experience. And so I chose modalities that weren't so trauma-based and intensive. But there were so many modalities you could choose from. So when I came out, I felt strong and confident. I knew I was ready to come back into the real world, but they work so hard with you on your continuing care plan.
How long were
And
you there for?
36 days,
Okay.
it's a 35-day minimum. Some people stayed, 45, 50 days. But it's a pretty penny. So you need to make sure you're sucking the marrow out of, everything you're getting at treatment. So people would get there and extend their stays. I went directly into an IOP when I got out, and I don't think a lot of people did that. And you have to advocate for yourself, work with my insurance, find, IOP that's either online or near me, give me sober coaching options, somatic experiencing options, therapy, whatever it is. You have to have multiple things as you get out. that you are filling your days with. It's so important because you have such a regimented schedule while you're in treatment. You're in meetings probably for at least 6 hours, if not 10 to 12 hours a day. And you get out and you're like, oh my gosh, what do I do with myself? So you have to have something as your backbone. So I just finished IOP March 31st, and now I'm in individual therapy and back in AA. But I needed that stepping stone as I got out of treatment.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Okay, Michaela, I am fully frustrated with my kids, whom I love more than life itself. However, as their mom, I feel like an absolute failure, and I can't seem to find the time to get us all organized and even have meaningful conversations. I feel like everyone is so busy. I'm so overwhelmed, so drained. Help me.
Yes, get that off your chest. As the busy mom, I get it. I have found that when I am stressed and feeling stuck, the best thing to do is ask for help. Perhaps book a therapy session. Therapy is for everyone, every human desiring to feel better, live better, and learn how to solve life's most pressing problems and concerns in real time. If you are thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and very convenient. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you could switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/sobergirls today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/sobergirls.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Yeah. So to echo what Lisa just said, getting out and having a full schedule has been highly, highly important for me because when we were in Sabino, our days were full from 8 a.m. till 9 or sometimes 10 o'clock. And it was meetings after meetings, and it was wonderful. It's all hard work, but really good. I joined a group there, or I was invited to be in a group that was Know Your Body. And I had to write a letter from myself to my body and then write a letter from my body to myself. When I arrived, I was so detached. My mind was so detached from my body. I no longer felt hunger pains. I dropped tons of weight. I was in survival mode. So I really needed that connection with my mind and my body again. I also took up Qigong while I was there, which is a form of martial arts, and it's a beautiful practice. And I do it every morning for about 10 to 15 minutes when I wake up before I shower and get to work because it's so grounding for me. And I love that practice. And EMDR is amazing, and the ART is great. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but it's kind of retraining. It's mostly for PTSD, and it's retraining your thoughts and your triggers with more positive images and stuff. And it also has eye movement, and you have paddles that buzz on the right and left hand. So it's multi-stimulus. But those four things have helped me more than anything.
I
So
love that you guys had those options, and I love that you guys got to choose. And you said there were, what, 30 modalities there you got to choose from?
I can't remember, probably close to, but in while
Wow.
we were there, you got to choose three modalities a week that you know that were your options.
On top of
You
your
had
other
exposure to pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And also then another big piece that was not necessarily considered an optional modality was neurofeedback. And so they go in and they do a brain reading when you first get to treatment, kind of looking at your alpha theta brain waves. And alpha is the relaxing brain waves when your eyes are open. Theta are your relaxing brain waves when your eyes were closed. And I think among the ladies that struggled, it was mostly ladies that struggled with alcohol there, all of us didn't know how to relax. We got there and our alpha and our theta brain waves were almost non-existent for most of us. So we used alcohol as a depressant to calm those brain waves, not knowing that like biological component. And you go into these neurofeedback sessions, Hazel, what, 3 times a week? Does that sound right?
Times a week, yeah.
And you learn how to meditate and actually, and through your breathing and meditation, actually change the neuroplasticity in your brain. Like you learn to calm yourself. And so by my final brain scan, my alpha and theta are almost in a normal range after just 5 weeks. And I can truly feel that. You know, when shit hits the fan now, I'm kind of like, all right, I got it. I'm not thinking, oh my God, I need to grab a drink real fast and like deal with this. It's more like, okay, this is happening and I'm level-headed about it. It's different. You can feel the change in your brain and your body.
I
I have a
completely.
question. So, what did you both experience after leaving treatment? Because I assume going into treatment, you're like this one person, and then leaving the treatment, you're an entire different person. So, was there like a culture shock when you got out? Was there a shift with your friendships? Was there a shift with like, just like, oh, I actually don't like to do this? Because I see that a lot in sobriety. It's like, oh my gosh, the things that I used to love, like I cannot do anymore. And you kind of learn to do these things that like you didn't have the time to do, and now you do. Like, how did that change for you?
So for me, it changed a lot. The first week home was really, really hard. The first 2 weeks home was really hard to reacclimate myself to society and all of that. But I gained such a solid foundation for, I'm able to say no now. I used to say yes to everything. If somebody wanted to do something, I was always a yes. Now it's like no, and I'm very confident in that. The breathing and just regrounding myself. I can't hang out with certain friends that are all about partying just because honestly, it's annoying. They repeat the same stories over and over, and it's just I'd rather be painting, or be at home with my kids. So that has changed some, but my community, like my solid group of friends, has grown so tight and so immensely. I've met people that I never would have met before if I was out drinking and doing the things with my old, regular friends. And it is such a great group of people.
Yeah. So that's a really good point, because a lot of times people come to us and say, "Oh, I'm going to lose all my friends." And I think that's the fear. People are actually more afraid to lose their friends than actually quit drinking. You know what I mean? Because it's so tied to friendships and connection. And I think you just hit it home with that, saying you have such deeper connections, possibly with different friends as well, maybe some old ones, right? And
Both.
that's it. You move on.
And my old friends, they appreciate and honor that I don't drink, and so they never push it. It's never an issue. If they want to, that's fine. It doesn't bother me.
That's
When you
beautiful.
start
Living the authentic version of yourself, your relationships become more authentic. And the people that you don't want in your life, you really realize you don't want them in your life.
Yes.
And so I had that fear too. I'm like, I moved to a new town 5 years ago, and it was during the pandemic. And I was so afraid of hanging on to these people that I used to go out to the bars with. Like, who else am I going to hang out with if I don't have these people? Like, if I change my life, I'm going to be alone. Then you create the sober community, and they might not live here, but your relationships and the depth is just, I can't even, put into words how profound it is. And you just stop caring about those surface relationships. And your tolerance for bullshit also changes, right? Like, my life is relatively low BS these days. I didn't realize how much was attributed to drinking.
It's like you're cutting out, I almost look at it as like we're cutting out processed foods. It's fake. It's not real. And it's not filling your body, your soul, your vessel. It's like it's
It's
processed.
actually toxic. Yeah,
It is.
relationships are truly, truly toxic. It fills you with negative feelings, thoughts, emotions. You kind of like, it's like everything is energy, and the people you surround yourself with really, really matter. It really does. And so even in the beginning of everyone's sobriety journey, I think we should all just take a step back and just be with self for a while. What do I like? What do I want to tolerate? What do I don't want to tolerate? What are my boundaries? And just get really, really clear, and then go out there and then just use your intuition to say like, yes, no, yes, no. And it's okay. Without hard feelings, with love, let people go. It's okay.
Absolutely.
It's essential to become the next version of yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just as the addiction is dying, and Oakley is, calling for me. Those relationships are addictive. They're part of that addiction. It's okay. I always say too, like, God bless, and then, moving on, and want the best for you. We're not aligned. We're not meant to be doing this dance together.
Well, it's part of an identity. So it's like big thing. It's like your identity shifts, right? So how has your identity shifted? I'm sure tremendously, right? And you're still in the work. So can you imagine like a year from now? It's amazing.
Crazy. And you're talking about the difference between going into treatment and coming out of treatment. Coming out of treatment is also a little bit traumatic, and but you have more tools to navigate it. I will say I am the best version of myself that I have ever been in my life.
Yes.
And I didn't know that that was possible. I kind of thought I was broken
Yeah.
going into treatment. And I do just see myself evolving continuously. So you're right. Like, Michaela, I'm excited for what's to come.
Yeah. For the first time, I'm actually starting to love who I am because I'm
Right.
myself. I never liked myself before because I didn't know who I was, but now I'm excited to learn more about myself. And I
Same.
really love who I am,
Same.
flaws and all.
I'm
Yeah.
just, this is, but this is what the truth is of sobriety and doing it the right way. It gets better and better and deeper and richer and truer. And you just have to keep going because the true authentic you is still, there's depths and layers there that we haven't even touched yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would love to know for anyone listening that is probably thinking like, oh, treatment isn't for me, but it's kind of like curious about it. Can you speak on that and perhaps share some tips, some mindset tricks, anything that could be helpful for people to just even gather some knowledge around this? Because I feel like there is so much stigma around it. And I think for me, even learning that there are places like the ones that you went to that are trauma-based and we spoke a while ago, and you even said, like, not everyone was there for alcohol. It was like other things that people were working through, right? So there are so many, like, so many things out there that we have no idea about. And I'm sure you didn't even know that this was possible 2 years ago, right?
Absolutely. I will say I was one of those people when I listened to your podcast, almost a year ago about treatment centers. I thought to myself, oh, thank goodness I'm not one of those people that needs to go to treatment. Fast forward, almost 6 months later, and I'm like, I don't feel like I have another option except for treatment. And my last drunk is a blessing and a curse, but mostly a blessing. Because it actually changed my life, because it was the catalyst for me going to treatment. And I'm going to give a plug. We've been talking about Sabino. It's Sabino Recovery in Tucson, Arizona. And it's a place where, you can hike most days. You get off property. You have the option to go to CrossFit 2 times a week. On Sundays, we had offsite where we would go get pedicures or go to movies, things like that. You did not feel cooped up. They kept you part of the outside world slightly. So you did, it wasn't such a culture shock when you got out of treatment. We talk about, it's a trauma recovery place. There were, I would say, about half the people, maybe less than half, had some kind of addiction recovery. So there were options for, recovery dharma, refuge recovery, AA meetings, and they weren't required, but a lot of people obviously in recovery attended those meetings. But the basis of their program is trauma focused. We were in intensive group sessions. Individual therapy was the basis of the program. I'm going to add to that, there were some people that went in with that needed true psychiatric care. It might not be the place for that. I think trauma in healing is really their focus. But if you need true psychiatric care, or a diagnosis or medication management, there might be better programs for you out there, or at least get a very clear picture on the type of treatment that you're going to get if you need psychiatric care. Another thing I would say, there's a lot of treatment and recovery centers out there that are medication pushers. They want you to do ayahuasca and all these things. I found some of these holistic centers were really about that. Not for me. I wanted, just to deal with my own brain and figure out what was going on there. Don't put layer one more, substance on top of what I'm already dealing with. And the last thing, and then Hazel, if you have anything to chime in, the last thing I'll say is when you're looking at treatment centers, they're expensive. I mean, the baseline that I was looking at was $50,000 for a month. And you can call these treatment centers though, and if they have openings, ask for a cash pay price. Or, hey, are there any modalities or things that I might not want to participate in that you can give me a discount? And that's not specific to Sabino Recovery. I won't say anything about their financials or situation that we had going in there, but generally in the centers that I researched, there's a cash pay price if insurance doesn't cover it. So it's life-changing though. I mean, anybody that I highly recommend getting to know yourself and becoming a better version of you. It's not just about addiction recovery.
Yeah, I agree. And the cost of it is absolutely worth it if you can do it. And they will work with your insurance after the fact. They have a team that works with you. So I've got them, fighting the insurance company, and I'll probably get 75% reimbursement. But it saved my life. It is the best money I've ever spent in my life. I promise you, I would not be here today if I had not gone there.
Hazel, and
There's
how did you find them? So, what was your process of searching?
So my sister-in-law gave me three options once I hit rock bottom, and I researched all three of those. And one was an 8-day on-site thing in Tennessee, and there, I can't remember what the other one was. And Sabino looked really intense, but it covered the whole gamut of everything. It was a holistic approach. They had psychiatrists. They had, they had everything. Massage therapists, like you mentioned earlier, but they. All of their different modalities for therapy was what really turned me on to it, and being out in nature. And I needed to get as far away from home as possible to just really disengage with my normal life and heal. So that's why I chose Sabino.
Yeah, I think this is really important conversation. And I just want to note, Lisa, you were talking about massages, and I just had this realization. I've been getting like weekly massages for a couple years now, basically since I've been sober. And I didn't realize, I just thought it just felt good. I didn't realize, and I've had trauma from, a childhood and things like that, that I actually needed that to get into my body. Holy moly. Like
I
literally, I'm
was
like, I'm
exactly
about to
that.
book my massage for tomorrow because,
Yeah.
we have an event this weekend, and I find myself when I have big things, like that is my go-to and that is my treatment to myself. And yes, it's an investment, but I feel amazing. Like you feel connected to your body, to your breath. Like I have a whole routine before I go, and I have a routine when I'm in the lobby and breathing, and I have tea, and it's this ritual with myself. And even though I do a lot of self-care during the day because I just love self-care. I work out, I walk, I do take time for myself every day. This is different. This is like getting into the muscles, into the tissues. I drink a lot of water afterwards. I'm conscious about flushing things out. And I just realized, like, oh my gosh, that's a treatment.
Well, you
Absolutely.
trap a lot of tension in your hips, and it can be, it's emotional tension can translate into physical tension. And I would be on that massage table some days and just start bawling. And the therapists there are like, okay, we all know why you're here. You guys are all kind of screwed up, right? And so she would just be like, girl, let it go. And I would just cry on that massage table. And I'm like, all right. And then I walk out of there and I'm like, oh my gosh, my mind and my body feels so good and so connected right
Yeah.
now.
No, and it just shows everybody is so different. You guys use different modalities to get to this place. Your aftercare is probably different. Like my aftercare is different. Aaron's aftercare is different. I think this is why I'm like drawn to yoga as well, is again, just the breath and the body. And so it's like, that's what works for me. And the purpose of this podcast is just to show you a variety of things. There's no one way. And if there's a book telling you, follow this protocol and do that. It's like, run. You have to figure it out on your own. You can try all different things, but your body will tell you, oh, this feels good. This feels like home. So I would love to know, just to wrap up, what are the modalities that you have now, and how have they evolved since, you last left treatment? How does it look like for you?
Yoga is a big thing for me. I'm an intensity person, and so I love my Orange Theory and CycleBar, but when I go to yoga a couple times a week, I choose the very gentle yoga classes and sometimes with sound bowls because it gets me out of my mind when there's another sound going on. And I just, same as you, Michaela, it's tons of self-care. I'm like, oh, I'm not spending money on wine anymore. I get to have a facial and a massage. I can do whatever I want, in the spa or self-care wise. And again, like staying connected to people like this, you guys, and AA and therapy, all those things are so important, mind and body.
Beautiful. Thank you. How about you, Hazel? What does your
I
yours
agree
look
with you.
like?
So mine is I love to run. I solve more problems on the pavement than I do anywhere else. So I run a lot, do yoga, and I'm a licensed art therapist. So I practice on myself now. When I do my paintings, it is all about what I am going through in that moment, whatever my journey is. And they're very layered paintings. So I have a lot of processes that I go through, and that's been very therapeutic for me. That's my biggest form of self-care, is my painting.
That's
Amazing.
incredible.
Just before we wrap this up, just remember, you can do all the modalities in the world and go to this therapist and that and talk, but it lands in the body. The body's the container of the trauma that's truly in your tissues. Like that statement is correct. Your issues are in your tissues. The fascia that wraps your muscle is where those memories are stored. And so that's why the massage is actually freeing that memory to then be released physically. That's why it's like this beautiful dance of mind, body, spirit when you put all these modalities together. And that's why you have to do all of it, or you will sit in that trauma forever and pick up again, or it's something worse. And that's, that is my takeaway from Oakley barking here, where I need a massage now after the stress.
Oh my goodness, ladies, thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we get off?
The last thing I want to say is if any listeners ever reach out to you and want more information or considering treatment, especially Sabino recovery, Hazel and I would be happy to talk to them. We're
Absolutely.
huge advocates of treatment and especially Sabino recovery.
Yeah, and we're
Thank
not paid
you.
by them either.
Yeah.
Greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thank you, ladies, for your time, for just sharing your story. I think it's going to help so many. And for anyone listening, thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast and follow us on Instagram as well. We hang out there, and we'll see you next week. Love you all.
You guys.
Thanks.
I'm Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.